And as I think about the songs that we were singing, one of them that jumped out at me was talked about the great love that God shows to us. And I have a question. How do people see the great love of God? How are people expected to see the great love of God? Yes. Through miracles? Okay. That'd be one way. Especially saw that as Christ himself was walking the earth, there was a lot of miracles. How else? Isn't it through you and I? Isn't it through people? Isn't that how people see the great love of God? Turn with me in your Bibles to Matthew 5. This is the beginning of what we commonly refer to as the Sermon on the Mount. And I would like to read the first 16 verses, Matthew 5, 1 to 16. Let's read. And seeing the multitudes, he, that is Jesus, went up into a mountain, and when he was set, his disciples came unto him. And he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. Ye are the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on an hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Okay, I need a little help this morning. I'd like somebody to volunteer to come up and show us what's in this box. Okay, Douglas. Hold it up so they can see it. What do we have here? Who wants to tell me what we have here? Okay, Lawrence. A flashlight. What's the purpose of a flashlight? Okay, here we go. I have one question first. Is this my light or is it your light? It's actually mine. This is my light. What is the purpose of this light? To see in darkness. That's right. Okay. My first main point is, whose light? Verse 14 says, ye are the light. And then we're going to go on to the purpose of the light here shortly. Ye are the light. It does not say this is Jesus' light. It says this is your light. Verse 16 again says it, let your light shine before men. And then again in verse 16, it says that we are letting it shine for God. So it is your light. We're talking about your light this morning. And you need to let it shine for God. Now, the purpose of the light. It was already said, the purpose of the light is to shine into darkness. Here in the text that we just read, verse 16 says, it is for men to see. Years ago, I was helping to set up a wireless networking system in Honduras, back in the village of Villa Alicia, before there was phones, before there was cell phones back in the village, before there was any kind of phones back in the village. So we had a tower that we were trying to get a wireless antenna pointed to Aguas del Padre, where Phillips lived. And we weren't quite sure at first how to determine what was a direct line of sight to that other tower. We got the idea to go up with, I forget if we used a mirror or a light. And from 1.5 miles, 2 miles away, whatever it is through the air, we saw that light from the other tower. And this is the kind of a light we're talking about. A light that you see from far away. A light that others can see. It's not hidden. It's there. The purpose of the light is for men to see. Verses 13 and 15 both bring out the thought that it's to illuminate others. It's actually to bring light to others as well. In the example I gave, we were just there. We just wanted to see the light. I wasn't planning on that light out there illuminating where I was. That's where the example falls short. Your light today is supposed to illuminate where other people are. Where you are is supposed to be a brighter place because of your light. Years ago, we went on a school trip to Crystal Cave. We walked into that cave, saw many of the spectacular natural displays of God's handiwork in the cave. Stalactites and stalagmites, various formations out of the rock. We got into the middle of the cave, and the tour guide says, "We're going to show you what darkness really is." He said, "Hold on to the hand railing because you're not going to be able to see." And he turned the lights out, and you could bring your hands right in front of your face, and you had no idea they were there. You could not see them. Right in front of your eyes, you could not see your hands. It was dark because the light was absent. But as soon as he turned that light back on, the darkness fled. The darkness was no longer there. The darkness. Every time. Now, this light, when Douglas pulled it out of the box, was lit. Why could you not see this light before he pulled it out of the box? The light was lit. It was illuminating its surroundings. But there was, as the Bible calls it here, there was a bushel over it. A bushel is a basket. So there was something put on top of that light. All it was doing was wasting the batteries. It was not doing any good. Sometimes we do that in life today. We have a light, but we put something over top of it. Either because we are scared to be noticed, we're intimidated. Maybe your light is flickering because its fuel source is no good. its fuel source is not reliable. Because of a person that's vacillating, they really want to be in the camp of God, and yet they really want their own things. If this light was flickering, it would not be my choice to take me on a walk through a cave. I want a light that is going to be lit and reliable. I want a light that is going to show me the way. Yesterday in the park, there was a lady that I chatted with a bit. And she said, I've heard you before different times on 149th and 3rd Avenue. She said, every time the hair on my arm stands on end. She said, there's something about your message, about your people, that's powerful. There's something there that it just draws me. Is that what your light is doing? Is it throwing a little illumination into the hearts and lives of other people? The purpose of the light. Verse 16 says that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So the purpose of our light is to glorify God. Now, does that mean that everybody that sees it will react properly to it? It does not. There are people who will revile God when they see that light. There are people who will refuse it, try to snuff it out. But the conviction that that light is bringing to that person's heart is glorifying God. It is glorifying God. The light is accomplishing its purpose. Just because people reject the light does not mean that the light is not there doing its purpose. You can choose to ignore this light. It doesn't feel very needed right now because there's lots of other lights here. But if we take several of these lights in the auditorium out one by one, you would notice a difference. You would notice that it's not as bright. And you would say, what happened to the light? Don't think for a minute that the world doesn't see you. You as an individual. They're not just looking at the group. They're watching your life as an individual. And what you do with your life is going to have a big impact on how they think about the light as a whole. I wrote down as a message burden that the call to be a missionary or a Christian is the call to glorify God. So it leaves the question, am I unashamedly sending out the light that God gave me, putting it out for all to see? Because failure to do so is failure to glorify God. I have to think, it was referenced here just a week or two ago, The Martyr's Mirror. It's a big book with the account of many Christians who in times past have died for their faith. One of the things that impresses me with the stories in that book is that these people were vocal. They were vocal about their beliefs and about the sins that were going on around them, even though they knew it was going to cost them their lives. Third part of the message is persecution is assumed. Verses 10 and 12, just right before he goes into talking about the light, he says, blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men shall revile you, When they shall say bad things about you, falsely. It says rejoice. How many of us here know how to rejoice when people say bad things about us falsely? The leather really hits the road on that one. It really does. It is hard for us to rejoice when somebody says something bad about us falsely. But we have the example of the apostles in Acts. They were pulled before the council, and they were beaten. They were told to shut up. Don't talk about Jesus. You're going to corrupt the minds of the people. And it says they went, when they were released, they went back to the disciples rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer for the name of Christ. It says the prophets were persecuted. Those who were vocal to the name of God before were persecuted. This was not something new in the 16th and 17th centuries, or whatever time period you want to go to. This is something as old as time. This is something that has been happening ever since man existed. Those who are willing to stand up for the cause of Christ face persecution of some sort. Today, we have so many freedoms. In a civil way, we have so many freedoms that I don't know if we fully comprehend. Actually, I'm sure we don't fully comprehend what it is to face persecution. We can have the police officers walk up and be interested in what you're doing. Your neighbor who's hanging out at night probably has a respect that kind of watches out for you. We don't really know persecution like many people have known it, or like many people do know it in many parts. The prophets were persecuted because they were the ones who spoke up. When Elijah ran into the wilderness, he escaped persecution. But finally, God had to put him back on track and give him a job again to go speak. Jesus told the Pharisees, he said, "It was your children who persecuted the prophets." There is a lot of persecution done in the name of religion. There is a lot of persecution coming from people that claim to be followers of God. That shouldn't surprise us. We should be expecting that. It should be confirmation that we are clinging to something they are not. Verse 11, persecution assumed, we shall be persecuted, reviled and persecuted. You know, there will be some kind of persecution. Even if it's not martyrdom, if you speak up for God, you are going to have people that are laughing you to scorn, that are mocking you. Does it matter? To me, it should not matter. If I am giving the message of God, they are mocking God. Verse 12 says, it's cause for rejoicing because we'll have a great reward in heaven. So persecution should be assumed, and it's cause for rejoicing. So the next point in the message I have here this morning is why shine? Why shine? Why do we need the light? Why do we need it on? First observation I have on that, Matthew 5, verse 15, because the rest of the house needs light. The rest of the house needs light. And I think we can put in there, the rest of the world needs light. You know, if you don't shine, the world is going to be in darkness. There is no light that comes from anywhere other than the followers of Christ. The world is in darkness without the light of Christ. So why shine? Because without it, the world would be in darkness. Last night, we had the youth over at our place. And because of the crowd, we plugged air conditioners around a little bit. And that was great and wonderful for a little bit until we figured out that the one circuit was overloaded. And all of a sudden, the girls were in darkness. They were in darkness. They needed a light from somebody. Their light had gone out. They needed a light from somebody. And thankfully, that was as easy as plugging the air conditioner in somewhere else and replacing a fuse. But brothers and sisters, this morning, if your light goes out, you are affecting people around you, not just yourself. You are affecting the street you live on. You are affecting your congregation, your church congregation. You are affecting your neighbors. It should not surprise you to hear a testimony from your neighbor that this street is better because you're here. That should not surprise you. You are a light that can dispel some of the darkness. I just got another mental picture in my mind. I've watched ladies light candles on a birthday cake many, many times. And oftentimes they'll take a match and light one or two candles. After that, they blow out the match. What do they do then? They take the lights that are already lit and use that to light more. And would to God that's what happens in our neighborhoods. That we can take our lights and get some more lights burning. Get them fueled by God Himself. Get them connected to the source. Verse 15, why shine? It raises our question, if our candle isn't lit, who will light the world? That's an implied question. You know, if your candle's not lit, who is lighting the world? There is a lot of darkness. Jesus said one place, there's a lot of darkness because men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds are evil. They're not lighting the world. They are, in fact, seeking out the darkness. You look at religious circles. Many people know God as a God of chastisement. A God who is there to punish. A God who is there just to do away with you as soon as you make a misstep. Brothers and sisters, this morning, that is propagating darkness. That's not propagating light. Is God a God of judgment? Yes, He is. But if we look at just that attribute, we're not seeing the light of God. The fifth point of the message here is practical ways of letting our light shine. 1st one I have is be a living example. I hear this point maybe almost overused. Because you feel the emphasis sometimes that If I live it, others will see it. That's all that's needed. But that's not true. Yes, I must live it. Others will see it. But the job does not stop there. The job does not stop there. But let's talk about this being a living example. Do people see anger and conflict, or do they see forgiveness? People are noticing one or the other in your life. Are they seeing the anger and conflict, or are they seeing forgiveness? With anger and conflict is broken relationships, broken families, broken friendships, lots of broken relationships. Do people see pride or humility? And I'm not throwing these out as abstracts. I think these are things we need to seriously consider in our own personal lives. Do people see pride or do they see humility? Do people see disgust or love? And let me explain just a little bit. As you see sinners around you and the things they're getting involved in, as you think about that individual, is there disgust or is there love? Brothers and sisters, this will make a big difference in whether people see and feel the light of God. Whether they see and feel your light pointing them to God. And I think we can talk about feel. If you would put your hand on any one of these bulbs, you would feel that the light is shining. There's heat there. People can feel. They can just feel if there's love there. Fourth one, fairly closely related. But do people see, feel arrogance or respect? And I want to challenge us on this. There's a lot more importance to this than we realize sometimes. And I look at my own relationships. There are many times when I've said things in jest, and the other person knew they were in jest, and they were not offended by them. But you know what? When I worked on turning that around, and it's something I still need to work on, but when I worked on turning that around, those relationships grew deeper. Those relationships where we could throw a jest back and forth and understand on both sides. When we focused on throwing respect back and forth, those relationships grew deeper. And I want to challenge us with that, because I think that is a struggle, a real struggle that we face. Practical ways of letting our light shine. Second sub-point here is witnessing for Jesus. We talked about being a living example, but you know what? We need to witness. We need to speak out. People see us. They see what you do, and they may be drawn to it. But are you out teaching them why you do what you do? Inviting them to come to Jesus and experience the same thing? Are you out there telling them the way, that Jesus is the way, that he is the one that brings light into lives, into human lives? Third subpoint, practical ways of letting your light shine, is speaking out against evil. This light right here, as long as it was in that box, did no good. There was nothing else in the box with it. And you know what? It's a temptation to be a light in a box. It's a real temptation to be a light in a box. But that light, however bright you let it shine, is doing no good. We need to be willing to be out, speaking out. This is not the right way. This is the right way. And I want to be careful that I'm properly understood here. But I've heard coming from pastors that you need to be prudent when you speak to issues of morality, of adultery, of transgender. I think we are on the other side. I think we are on the other side. I think we are on the side of hiding our light. Let's be willing to speak out against evil. The fourth subpoint I have under practical ways of letting our light shine is going where there is darkness. You know what? Unless we realize there's darkness in the world and are willing to go reach out to souls that are in darkness, unless we're willing to be a missionary for Christ, unless we're willing to be called, willing to go out, we let a lot of things undone that should be done. And there's a lot of darkness in this world. Am I advocating that we go move into center of wickedness just for the sake of being there? No, I'm not. But we need to be willing to reach out to those who are in the darkness, those who don't have a light, those who can't see, those who are stumbling because it's dark. All around them it's dark. A couple of points that I want you to take home. If you remember nothing else I said, God's people are the only light. If you are a follower of God, you are one of the only lights. Number two, doing and teaching the kingdom of God is true greatness. Are you willing to be out there and doing, out speaking and doing? You know, we can do things acceptably to the populace, but that does not mean we're righteous. What really matters is, am I doing what God has called me to do? And the third thing I want you to remember, if we're salt without savor, or if we are light under a bushel, we are good for nothing. Good for nothing. The salt is good for nothing but to be thrown out and trodden under the foot of men. And I would trust this morning that we can be a light that is unashamedly shining out to the world around us. Let's kneel for prayer.